Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Garden Better. I'm Adam Woodhams, and with me is my faithful companion, Jenny Dillon.
Hi, Adam.
We're gardeners in crime, aren't we?
Oh, we certainly are.
Well, stick around, folks, because in this episode, we are going to have a look at everything you need to know about your summer veggie garden. We're going to have a bit of a chat about all the different styles of raised beds and their benefits. And then I'll talk to Mark from Biofilter about a particular type of raised garden bed, wicking beds, which are very in at the moment.
I'm going to put one in this summer.
Yes, I'm thinking it's going to be the best solution for our place too. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a show without
Milton Black. He'll be here.
Absolutely. So let's get straight into it. It is the height of salad season, Jen, isn't it? The middle of summer, your veggie garden should be really pumping right about now. So how's yours looking?
Okay. Yeah, the cucumbers are good.
Yeah. I must admit, we haven't really got a veggie garden going at our place yet. We've been so busy with renovations. I've been putting fruit trees in here and there, but I haven't gotten down to the finer point of the whole veggie garden. But I do love my veggie gardens. I think that they're a fantastic addition to just about every home garden. And summer is the time where you get some of the beautiful, beautiful things happening. But maintenance is the key, isn't it, Jen, at this time of year?
Absolutely, because if you've got vegetables growing really, really well, you've got weeds growing really, really well as well.
That's exactly right, because most of our vegetables are basically annuals, whether they be warm or cool season, and most of our weeds are annuals, and the condition that your veggies love
is the conditions that weeds love. Yes.
So one of the big things, of course, is water. You need to make sure you're keeping the water up to your veggie garden.
Well, with your summer salads, yes, they're mostly water, so you've got to give it to them for them to give it back to you.
Yeah, and one of the simplest ways to do that so you're not wasting water is to make sure you're keeping things mulched. And I am, as I know you are too, Jen, very keen on loosened mulch and pea straw mulches on veggie gardens because they have that quick breakdown and they add lots of nitrogen to the soil, which is very good for your leafy plants in particular.
Yeah.
So do make sure you're keeping your veggie garden well mulched. If you planted pre-spring, which you probably would have done with these summer veggies, you should have mulched at that time, and chances are that mulch will be needing a bit of a top-up now.
Yeah, it would have broken down by now.
And the pests, I hate to say it, but they're the reality of veggie gardening, aren't they, that you have to deal with all of those creepy crawlies and sap suckers and all sorts of things. So
yeah, you just got to get in there and look under the leaves. You know, there's nothing worse than pulling a salad out and having for dinner and then serving it up and there's something else there.
Some unexpected protein.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, and it's vigilance really is the main thing with most pests, that you keep on top of them.
You have to go out every day. I mean, you're going to go out every day anyway to crop, to take your fresh lettuce.
And that's where I think social media has a lot to answer for in this respect. That
Why?
A lot of people have the impression that a veggie garden is something you put in and it turns out perfect and you just go and pluck veggies from it all the time. You need to give yourself at least 10 minutes a day to go out and check your veggie garden to see anything that's going ripe, to look for any pests, to see if anything needs a bit of water or whatever the case may be. You do need to dedicate some time every day to a
veggie garden. It's like sweeping the kitchen after at the end of the evening. It's just a little chore. You go out there. It's like going to find the eggs after the chooks have had their day in the garden. You go out to your veggie patch, have a look around, see what's happening.
Just see what's happening, yeah.
I mean, anything could happen when you're away for over a couple of hours.
But it's actually a very nice, relaxing daily ritual, I find. You know, you do just go out and you have a little wander and you can have your frosty beverage of choice in the other hand and you can be looking for grubs and things. And an important one with the grubs, because they can be one of the ones that do a lot of damage very quickly. They are very good at not getting caught. That's why they do so much damage. And you tend to find that they, as you mentioned, they hide during the day underneath the leaves or right down at the bottom of stems. And it's not surprising for them to have adopted a colour that's almost the same as the plant they're feeding on. So they can be very, very well camouflaged.
They are amazing at that. It's just brilliant.
So generally, if you go out a little later in the day, you will find them starting to get a bit more active because they often feed at night, so or early in the morning. So go out there and pick those grubs off. If you've got chooks, you can collect them and throw them to the chooks and the chooks will love you forever. Or you can do whatever else you want with them, like
squash them.
Make them go pop.
Oh. Yes. Salt works on the ones that don't have shells.
The ones that don't have, yes. This is very true, yes. And, look, any chemical treatments you use to take care of these pests and other problems, make sure that they are things that are safe for veggies and do look at all the organic options. And one of the best things to do is to be selecting products that have a short withholding period. And this is something you'll find listed on the back of the label. They'll either say there's no withholding period or they'll tell you the withholding period. Now, what a withholding period is the amount of time between spraying and picking. So basically, you obviously don't want to be spraying for pests and then if you need
eating
that food that night,
eating
it immediately. No. Exactly. So you want stuff that either has zero or very short withholding periods because that tells you a lot about the toxicity to us. So, and as I said, look at some of those organic products. They are very, very, very capable of dealing with even some serious, serious pests. Now, if you're a tomato fan, and who isn't really, Jen? I mean, you've got to love tomatoes. They're so easy to grow, productive. Mm. You can plant some more now. So because chances are if you put plants in as soon as you could, they will be probably cropping very well now. I remember that was what one of my TAFE lecturers always used to say a million years ago. With tomatoes, if you're getting your first crop off by Christmas, you planted them at the right time. That was generally the rule of thumb. So over the height of summer is when they should be doing their maximum cropping. But if you want to extend your crop across into the periods where we're starting to cool down a little bit, and in a lot of areas you can keep picking fruit well into autumn, if not early winter.
Well, especially if you've got a wall against which you're growing them. And
a warm wall.
Yeah, that will generate heat.
Exactly. So you can get those plants in the ground now and you'll have crops of tomatoes for a lot longer, as I said, way
into
winter.
But I think it's a really important practice actually to with summer vegetables, right from the get-go, is to pace your planting so that you don't end up with gluts that you're not going to eat. So if you sort of plant lettuces at every 2 or 3 week period, you can't freeze a lot of these vegetables.
That's exactly right. So you succession plant and that gives you a rolling crop for a longer period.
Yeah.
And you don't need an enormous amount of space to do that. You know, it might just be, using lettuce as an example, it might just be two lettuce a couple of weeks apart. So you end up with a total of, 8 or maybe 10 lettuce. So you don't actually need an enormous area for that.
No.
And that'll give you a rolling crop of lettuce for months to come. Now, there are actually a few things that you can plant now. The important thing, though, if you're planting this stuff, is to make sure you're keeping everything suitably moist because it's very easy for the soil to dry out and those younger seedlings to dry out at this time of year. So a few of the things that you could look at planting, and, of course, rely on some local knowledge here if you can. Your local nursery can tell you whether it's right for your zone or not. But things like dwarf beans are very good to be planting now. A lot of the brassicas, the things that we think of as those winter crops,
plants,
you can start getting them in the ground now and that will get you earlier crops in winter. So if you're thinking about that, you can be getting those things like cabbage and broccoli and Brussels sprouts.
Yum!
Rhubarb crowns are a fantastic one to get in the ground now if you like rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a tip though, if you've got any silver beet, the coloured silver beet, the rainbow chard.
What?
I know, you don't like it.
Oh.
If you have rainbow chard in the ground and you have rhubarb in, make sure you put them in separate places, because particularly if you've got kids, because anyone that knows anything about rhubarb knows that the leaves are actually poisonous.
Yeah.
And you don't want a little person going out and making the mistake of picking silver beet, or thinking they're picking silver beet, and they're actually picking the
rhubarb. Just don't plant silver beet, I think.
You really don't like silver beet, do you, Jen?
No.
So you could also be planting spring onions. One of my absolute favourites, sweet corn.
Oh, yes.
Is up for planting now. Mm. It's a fantastic. And look, silver beet. Put some silver beet in. Jen will love you. She'll come around and help you grow it. But look, dude.
It's great for the compost. It's a
compost accelerator.
Yeah,
but talk with your local nursery and see what they have coming in punnets, and that's generally your best judge to be able to find out what is the right thing for your area at any given time is what your local nursery actually has coming in. So happy planting.
Yes, indeed. Go for it.
Jen, when people are growing their veggies, mm-hmm. I still reckon one of the best ways to be growing is in raised garden beds.
Yep.
And they are such a practical way of growing, not just veggies, because you can grow, you know, perennials and flower gardens in raised beds, or in fact, virtually anything.
I've got trees in my raised beds.
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly. And the number of advantages and the styles of raised beds, I think, is worthy of us having a chat about them.
Yeah, okay. Well, it takes the back breaking out of gardening for a start.
I think that is one of the really big ones. It makes things a lot easier for maintenance, for planting, for everything else. And you can, if we're thinking of a raised bed, perhaps the easiest one to get in your mind is a raised sleeper bed, you know. So long as
it's not pine.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Okay. We'll talk about the right type of timber. Thank you very much for reminding me there, Jen. But the reason I say they're a good one to think of is because you go up in increments of height.
Yes.
You know, that basically a sleeper is 200 millimetres and, you know, you can have a 200 mil bed, a 400 mil bed, a 600 mil bed, so you can adjust the heights. And the beauty of that is you don't have to bend down as much, or if you're kneeling, they're at a better height. You're not sort of falling right flat on your face, or you can sit on the edge of them once you make them a bit higher. So you do have that distinct advantage of being able to work with them. And if people have mobility issues, particularly if people are in wheelchairs or walking frames, whatever the case may be, you can take a bed a little bit higher again, and it makes it much easier to actually get around the side of that bed and be able to work into it. One thing I do like to remind people of, though, is that if you're creating a raised bed, particularly with vegetables, something where you do need to be regularly working it, is don't make them too wide. They need to be a comfortable distance that you can reach the centre without Yes. having to stretch too far. Mm-hmm. So for most people, you're not going to make a bed much wider than about 1.2 if it's going to be a typical veggie type bed, and that's then comfortable for you to stretch across into the centre Yep. without too much effort. You might be able to go a bit wider, but you know, personal preference. Now, the other thing too, of course, is that you're creating a situation where you have a lot more control over the growing conditions of your plants.
You're putting it in a position where the light is perfect for it.
Mm.
You can even actually maintain greater control over your soil, because most of the time you'd have to bring it in.
Yeah.
And you have got the soil, it's perfect for your veggies.
Mm. And you also, the way you can save water with them, or you can manage the water a lot better. So, you know, if you're growing in the ground, you have to apply the water, and then apart from that, it's whatever the soil is actually doing at the time. So you might have soil that's staying damp for too long, mm-hmm. which you don't necessarily want, whereas you can tend to avoid that with a raised bed because of the fact that it's going to have that drainage. So excess moisture is going to drop out of there. But so there's a few distinct advantages there. Now, we mentioned the sleepers. The important thing is that treated pine is fantastic stuff in the landscape. It works really well. It's very easy to work with the most basic tools. But if you are doing anything where you can physically contact the sleepers, or the sleepers are in contact with anything such as food plants, do not use CCA treated pine. So that's copper chrome arsenic treated. You need to use what's called safe pines. So that's things like ACQ or micronized copper. These are safer products, micronized iron, I should say. These are safer products rather than the copper chrome arsenic type products. Now,
yeah, because the arsenic leaches into
the arsenic does leach, and in fact, even in kids' playgrounds and things, and handrails and decks, you'll find now that all the companies are switching over to using ACQ pine in particular as being the alternative, as the much safer option. So make sure you do use the right pine. Don't use treated pine, CCA treated pine. You can use that, as I said, safe treated pine. Now, another type of raised planter bed is a raised box, a raised planter box. And this is one I've actually have a video of on my YouTube channel, which is where effectively you create a raised garden bed, but a base underneath it, and you put it on stilts is what it comes down to. And that way you're creating a bed at a much better height for working with. So you can put it right up at hip height, you know, mm-hmm. like the way you would have a workbench. And when you create something like that, normally when I build something like that, I'll dress the outside so it looks like from top to bottom it's the same thing. But reality is underneath it will be hollow. It'll be open because you really only need, 300 or 400 mil of soil for your plants to grow in, because that's all that veggies really need for that active root zone. So,
but also if you didn't want to enclose that base, couldn't you use that for storage?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the space underneath is ideal for storage. You can you might just enclose the side and the back, and then you can have the rest of it there for sticking things.
You have a dog kennel.
To keep guard on your veggie patch, to make sure nobody's stealing your veggie. No, you can, you know, all your punnets and trays and pots and all those sort of things. So just the black snakes and the redbacks and everything, they can all go in underneath there. Mm. Perfect. Now, a twist, of course, on raised bed is aquaponics. Do you know much about aquaponics, Jen?
A little bit. But as I said before, this summer I'm putting in a wicking bed.
Yes, well, we're going to have a chat with Mark from Biofilter about wicking beds, but that's where you get into some of these areas. The wicking beds are very popular with the permaculture specialists. That's one of their things, and they build the beds from scratch. Mm. And aquaponics is a growing area as well. And basically what you have with aquaponics is a situation of a pond, which may contain, it could be yabbies, it could be edible fish of your choosing, or it could just be koi. And then the pump for that pond is connected to a garden bed that is basically a growing medium. So it'll be a gravel or a particular volcanic rock, things like that.
Scoria?
Scoria is often used. Mm-hmm. And you run the water from the pond into this bed, and it floods full and then has a special mechanism, so then it drains itself empty. So it constantly fills up, drains. So it's sort of like a hydroponic bed. But what it's doing is using the water from the pond, which is very nutrient rich from all the creatures that are living in your pond,
right.
And that then fertilizes your vegetables or herbs. The water, when it flows back out, is then very purified. So it works as a filter for the pond.
It's a good idea, isn't it?
It's a very, very clever system, and it basically creates this closed loop. And particularly now that there's extremely good solar-powered pumps out there with battery backups,
mm-hmm.
you can actually run the whole thing independent of power supply. So at the end of it all, Jen, there's a lot of different options with raised garden beds.
And I think they're all fantastic.
One of the most in type of raised beds at the moment are wicking beds. So let's talk with someone who can give us the lowdown on what they are and how they work and why you really, really, really want one. You just might not know it yet. Welcome, Mark Noyce from Biofilter.
Hi, Adam. How are you going?
I'm fantastic, mate. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, first off, how about you fill us in a little on Biofilter and what it is that your company does?
Well, essentially, Biofilter designs and manufactures products that make gardening easy, easier than they've ever been before. We design wicking beds that self-water and last a long time, and we make them from recycled, sustainable materials.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's a very important thing now, that often we get products that talk about sustainability, but they don't actually go right back to that point of origin, do they? And that's an important point of difference with the Biofilter product, that you account for that sustainability for a lot of the steps through the actual manufacturing process. Now, look, a wicking bed, often when people ask me about them, it can be a wee bit difficult to explain, and I pointed out as being kind of like a giant self-watering pot, but it's a little bit more technical than that, isn't it? And how do the products actually work, and how in particular do your Biofilter products work?
Well, you're not far off. A self-watering pot plant, everyone knows what a self-watering pot plant is. It has a reservoir at the bottom and it has an ability to suck water up through little soil cones, and that's what we've done, only on a much bigger scale with our products. And we can hold over 110 litres worth of water in each one of our square metre modules that we make. And they're a bit like a Lego brick. You can connect them together and then they self-water for weeks at a time through what we call capillary action, which is the way trees suck water up out of the ground.
Mm. And that's an interesting thing too, isn't it? Because, you know, if we all go back to high school, that's one of the basic principles we all learn is that, oh, yes, water only ever runs downhill. But reality is it does defy gravity at times, doesn't it?
Well, have you ever put tissue paper in water and watch it travel upwards?
Yes.
Well, that's capillary action right there.
Yes.
A fibrous nature of a material sucking water up against gravity. And that's the very basic thing that we take advantage of with our self-watering wicking garden beds.
And then that, of course, is amplified by the plants exerting effectively what is suction pressure to increase that upright upward movement. Yeah. Now, look, from a sustainable perspective, what are the benefits of a wicking bed over a conventional raised bed? Because we've just been talking about all sorts of different raised garden beds. So what are the advantages of a wicking bed over a more traditional raised garden bed?
Raised garden beds have got us to where we are today after 10,000 years of agriculture. So, you know, traditional garden beds have been fantastic, but they're very weed intensive and they use a lot of water. So you pour the water on and it flows through the soil into the ground below. And when it gets hot, that top 150, 200 millimetres can dry out very, very quickly. Mm. And so if you're not out there keeping up with that, the water demand for the plant, what happens is that the plants get water stress. They release a hormone that says, hey, I'm not going to be around much longer. I better go to seed. And then your veggies bolt. Mm. Okay. So a wicking garden bed keeps that moisture up to the plant all the time that there's water in the reservoir. And that just keeps things optimal for the best growth for your veggies.
And of course, you're going to end up with a lot less evaporation because instead of watering the, you know, all of the soil, the moisture being available from the top down, it's being available from the bottom up.
That's right.
Therefore, it has to travel through the soil before it even reaches a point of evaporation.
That's right. So our wicking beds have essentially a dry crust on the top. So that cuts off losses from evapotranspiration. We're using about 60% less water than a traditional raised garden bed with our wicking system. And better still, what rainfall does fall on the garden bed, it's captured in its own reservoir. So you don't actually lose any water, any of that precious stormwater or rainwater that we get.
Yeah, and that's where it's sort of worth explaining a little bit how the wicking bed works. It basically has that reservoir down the bottom that has an overflow point so that the bed doesn't just completely fill up and flood if you get a lot of rain, that basically it will fill up, it'll fill the reservoir, right. And then when it hits that overflow point, it will actually run out so you don't end up with too much water in the bed. So it's a very intelligently balanced system the way it works. Now, if somebody, for instance, was looking at getting into food gardening for the first time, would you see a wicking type product as being one of the better options for them to use as their first venture into that area?
Sometimes I think our system is gardening for dummies.
Yeah. Right?
You just can't get it wrong. You can't overwater these garden beds. And hey, if you forget about it for a few days, well, you know what? It's just watering itself for, in our case, a couple of weeks at a time.
Yeah,
in between fills. So you really can't go wrong. It is the most foolproof way of growing anything.
And that's a really interesting point. I must admit, I do get a bit cranky with some in my industry who portray veggie gardening as something you just, you know, put some plants in and then come back and you have this wonderful crop a little bit afterwards. You know, the reality is you've got to give it, you know, particularly in warm weather, you've got to give it 20 minutes or half an hour every day to make sure everything's got the water it needs and be looking out for pests and all that sort of thing. So, you know, to have that advantage of not having to water, and particularly when water is you know, the topic of the day for so many of us around the country to have an opportunity, as you said, 60% saving is enormous to be able to save that amount of water and still reliably be able to grow your plants. Because it's not just veggies either. People could be growing their, you know, smaller shrubs and things in these beds too, couldn't they?
Absolutely. And your plants don't know that you're going to be home at 4:30. They're getting water stressed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when it's peak. You know, they can't hang on. They can't hang on to wait for Adam to come home and water them. They're going, they've gone water stress, release, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah.
And the wicking bed stops that. The wicking bed really prevents that from happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, one thing I find interesting is initially when you released your range, it was very much the classic corrugated iron garden bed that was tailored particularly for the veggie growers. And now you have introduced a fantastic range that's all really suitable for apartment dwellers, for people with courtyards, people with small spaces. You could effectively make a green wall of veggies out of this stuff or you know, virtually any other plants. It could be flowering annuals if you so wished. And I think that's fantastic that you've started to create these solutions for different situations. And one thing I have to give you full points on is I've written about this many times, that people buy these beautiful big pots and then they fill them up with an enormous amount of potting mix and they put a big plant in it, then they wonder why the corner of their deck starts sagging because they've got half a ton of plants and pots standing on the corner. And you have some very good advice for people on calculating the amount of load that they're putting on their deck or their area and making sure that they're not overloading a given spot, which is it's well done for doing that because it does get forgotten. But yeah, those solutions you have for apartment dwellers, do you want to just walk us through those a little bit?
Yeah, we've got a stepped version of what we call a food wall. That can be vertical, two stacks high, effectively doubling your space. And we've got it in a step version, and they can all be connected together in an array, in a module. For balconies, we don't like them against a balcony wall because they can be a climbing hazard. We don't want to be responsible for anybody having young visitors climb up and then over the balcony. So they've got to be placed appropriately. There's a big warning on any of our product there for that, plus the weight. But for balconies, you know, a lightweight solution is what you want, and you want something in that can cope with the water and cope with the temperature and changing climate. And these little planters do that quite well.
Yeah. Now, is there anything complicated about how someone would set up a wicking bed? Do they need a particular soil, or can they just use a standard potting mix or a mix from their landscaper? How do you go about setting things up?
Well, with our food cube system, for example, all you need is the potting mix that you're going to grow your veggies or your plants in. You don't need rock, you don't need scoria, you don't need builder's plastic, ag lines, any of that stuff. All you need is your growing media. And that growing media needs to be really fibrous. You know, we've got coir and coconut husk and scoria in our mix that we make. But there's others out there that do a very good job. Anything that's designed for a terracotta pot, for example, will have very good water holding and wicking capabilities, we've found. So there's some really good products out there as well. We make one ourselves just because, you know, we wanted to make sure that we get a great result. But there's others out there that do good. If you buy just a general potting mix, be careful because that can slump and it can close down the air-void ratio of the potting mix, and it can effectively suffocate your plants if it's going to be sitting in water for a while. So you've got to be careful about those sort of things. And sand, if you just put a dirt in there, you know, it won't have that fibrous capacity to wick the water up like the dishcloth in the water type of thing.
Yeah. So basically a premium potting mix is what folks should be looking to using.
Absolutely.
Or if they're doing a larger bed, then a premium mix from their landscape supplier. Now, when you're watering it, do you water onto the surface of the soil, or do you actually fill the reservoir and let it work from there?
When you get seedlings, we recommend that you water them in from the top so that they don't have that shock when you first plant. And what then happens is, you know, you set your water level because our wicking systems have a variable water height setting. So you can raise and lower the water to suit either summer or when you've got your seedlings. So you can raise that up and get that really quite moist, quite saturated, and then let the plants establish. And then filling as normal is from the corner posts into the reservoir directly, not from the top. So it cuts down 80% of your time standing out there with a hose, wondering, you know, when you're going to get bitten by mosquitoes. Well, you know, you don't have to worry about that. You race out there, fill it up with your hose, off you go, have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And what are your top tips for folks to get the most from a wicking bed?
Well, get a really good potting mix. Get a really good potting mix. It's going to do the job. Spend a bit more on that, and invest in some good quality mix like that. Position them well so that they get good access to sun, and you're going to get the most out of your veggies. And buy a really good wicking bed product. And I could probably name one or two of those.
But. Yeah. Well, look, thank you, Mark Noyce from Biofilter. I reckon you've introduced a lot of folks to a fantastic gardening option that they just may not have known existed. Now, to find out more about Mark's products, you can visit Biofilter, that's biofilta.com.au. Thank you, Mark.
Gardening by the Moon with Milton Black.
Hi, Milton. How are things going?
Oh, very well, Jen. I suppose everybody's getting ready for the big Australian Day coming up soon. And
yeah.
The next.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everyone's still on holiday, or a lot are on holiday, and the poor old garden's been neglected here to a certain degree. And or they've got the neighbours watering and looking after the garden, or the kids that haven't gone on holiday, which is a good thing, I suppose. But there's still, you know, little things you can do too. I mean, you can, don't forget those indoor plants, you know, they need a little bit of a water too and a little bit of a feed. So I think you'll find, and the hanging baskets. And look, a good little tip here too, you know, if you're going on holidays, which is a good thing, you can put the bottles upside down, you know, those sort of water bottles. So it's going, or better still, go into your ice box, pull out a pile of ice cubes and lay them on the oil surface if you're going away for a few days. And that'll keep them sort of, keep the potting mixture feeling moist while you're away. So fill them up with ice cubes. The ice cubes don't freeze the roots or anything like this, but it does drip that water down and gives them a little bit of a feed. So ice cubes are very good for the garden. So the moon enters Capricorn on Wednesday at 3 o'clock. Now, that's a good afternoon. It'll be getting a little bit cooler, about at 3, going into 4, and still warm, though, but an ideal time to do a little bit of gardening. Now, of course, you don't do any planting over this week, because what you've got to do is do everything to save your garden from the bugs and also from getting the mites and things like that. So spray, fertilise, weed, do all your maintenance running right through until the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
So no gardening as far as planting goes. It's only really sitting down and doing those little jobs in the garden. Now, there's a new moon Saturday, the 25th. And, of course, on the 26th, which is the big day, the moon's in Aquarius, so you don't do any gardening that day. You can sit back and have your coffee or your beer or your glass of wine and do whatever you've got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And get prepared for Monday, the 27th, because the moon actually moves into Pisces, which is a very fertile sign. And, of course, on the 27th and the 28th and up to 10 o'clock in the evening on the 29th, those are fabulous days for above-ground crops. So you can plant anything that you want to plant that grows above the ground, you know, your cauliflowers, you can put in your hickory, your endives, you can put your lettuce and your marrows, anything that grows above the ground. And don't forget your sweet corn too should be starting to look pretty good at the moment.
Yep.
And sweet corn needs a little bit of fertilizing and spraying. So that period from the 20th to the 24th, excellent there for a little bit of extra zap into your sweet corn to get it cracking. And some of them will be starting to pick corn there around that period of the latter cycle of the month. So anything above the ground crops, especially from the 26th up until the moon enters into Aries 10 o'clock on the 29th. Now, on the 30th and 31st, just a little bit of watering and fiddling around. But on Saturday, which is a good period there, that's on Saturday the 1st of February, moon's in Taurus in the morning. Any above ground crops can be planted during that particular cycle. So it's a good cycle there for above ground crops. And you can't plant anything on Sunday because it's the first quarter of the moon in Taurus and the moon square with the sun. So it's a no-no day. So you've really only got for the weekend and the beginning of February, the first above ground crops there. But I think you'll probably find two tomatoes over this particular cycle. That's a very good cycle for actually cultivating there during the 20th and the 24th. So your tomatoes should be looking still pretty good during that period. So start picking them during that cycle when the moon's in its low form. But apart from that, it seems to be a bit of a holiday period for most people.
And you're not working as hard at all.
Yeah, and with Australia Day coming up, it's good. But, you know, it's funny, but my neighbour has been waking up quite regularly lately with hundreds of flowers with no heads on all over a doorstep, over the garden and the drive. And you know what?
What's been
happening? She thinks she's been stalked.
Oh. Excellent.
I'll see you next week then.
Okay, Jen. Take care.
Well, thanks for joining us, folks. And Jen, thanks again for another great show. I've had a blast.
So have I. So I always enjoy these times with you, Adam.
Yeah.
They're great.
Oh, thanks. Don't forget to hit that big old subscribe button. And if you want to make it easy for other gardeners to find us, don't forget to rate and review the program. And if you've got any questions you want answered, then in the show notes, you'll find our email address. So just drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you.
Also, people can see what you look like. They go to YouTube, search your name, and find all your helpful videos.
They can. Thank you, Jen.
That's quite all right. See you next time.
See you next time, guys.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.